Welcome to Global Investment Voice, where we explore investment migration issues and opportunities from around the world. With a special focus on the U.S. EB-5 Immigrant Investor Program, we'll also cover citizenship and residency by investment programs from around the globe. If you're an investor, fund manager, developer, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of these global investment migration programs, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host attorneys, Mona Shaw and Rebecca Singh, as well as other investment migration leaders from around the world. So let's get into Global Investment Voice.
Mark, Rebecca, here we are back again to discuss one of the latest consternations in the EB-5 industry. And we have been reporting on these issues for more than, 8 years?
Yeah, I can't tell you, Mark, how many episodes have we said?
This is episode 205, over 200 episodes. Yeah, it's a reoccurring theme here.
Like we said, there's never a dumb moment in EB-5.
We've been listening to this for a little while, Rebecca, but I feel that only when some of the social media relating to regional centers and regional centers trying to make a little bit of a noise and a little bit of splash came out, the investors started panicking. There was a recent email which was sent out, which stated, and I quote, over 100 EB-5 regional centers have received notices of intent to terminate from USCIS, including several well-known regional center sponsors. Da-da-da-da.
That sounds scary.
That alone was enough to panic people, because people still recall the time when the industry was closed for a year, well, the EB-5 regional center program was closed for a year. So when they see emails and texts like that, they are worried. They're going, well, what's going on? Could this affect my regional center? Could this affect me? And what does it even mean?
Yes, I think we have a lot of investors who are concerned with what's happening, what's going on. I mean, we say over 100 EB-5 regional centers. Back in the days, that may have been nothing, right? Because you had over 800 regional centers. The numbers have dwindled. And so that over 100 EB-5 regional centers receiving the notice of intent to terminate, that's 25%. You know, the regional center is huge for the EB-5 program. So there is a lot of concern of what's happening.
Right. Of course, for anyone who's listening, they're like, well, what is a regional center? For anyone who's filing a pooled investment, you are going through a regional center who is sponsoring the project. But let's start at the beginning, Rebecca. Why? Why is USCIS issuing these notices of intention to terminate?
Everyone's basically receiving the same notice of intention to terminate on what's called the integrity fund fee.
Or rather, non-payment of the integrity fund fee.
Yes, non-payment of fees. So let's take a step back. Congress came out with REIA, right? The EB-5 Reform and Integrity Act of 2022. We've been discussing this over and over in our podcast. But in this specific issue that we're having with the non-payment of integrity fund fees, here Congress stipulated that regional centers had to pay a fee that went into the integrity fund. So you're paying either a $10,000 fee if you have 20 or less investors in your regional center, or you're paying $20,000 if you have more than 20 investors. And that's the issue that's coming up now.
Well, the integrity fee, which was established by the Act, was set for something specific, though, Rebecca, wasn't it? It wasn't just a random amount which was just put out.
No, so the fees were set to go into, as we said, the integrity fund fee, which was set to go into oversight and compliance of regional centers.
Right.
It was going into conducting investigations and doing audit reports. So that's how those numbers came about. That's what the integrity fund fee, the purpose of the integrity fund fee. Now, the problem is when this came out, it was supposed to be paid for the fiscal year coming up. So you had to pay that fee between October 1st and October 31st. When REIA came out, it was already March of 2022. So there was much confusion. So of course, what USCIS did is that they then had the power to extend that deadline. So Congress gave us the stipulation, here's the regulations, you have to pay this fee. But then it was up to USCIS on how to collect the fees and when to collect the fees. And that's where all the confusion came about, because we were supposed to have a deadline of October. October 1st of 2022 passed. Now we're in April of 2023. And as you can see, it's already getting confusing with all these multiple deadlines.
Well, I think it was made even more confusing because nobody understood what USCIS really wanted us to file that very first year. If you recall, we were all thinking that we had so much to do. Then suddenly at the 11th hour, USCIS gave us time, extra time, and said, okay, you do not have to file by December 31st. And that was 2022. You can file next year. And everybody gave a sigh of relief. And then it moved to 2023. Now the confusion in 2023 was, which integrity fee do we file? Do we pay for? Do we file for a 956? Oh, we don't need to file for a 956. Do we do the G form this year, next year? I really felt like it was unclear. And there was only a handful of us who were doing this and trying to follow and understand what USCIS was stipulating and how the goalposts kept changing. So you can see straight away, Mark, you're already confused as to the dates.
A bit, yeah.
Not even with the dates. It was which regional centers had to, as we mentioned, the I-956G and the I-956. We already have regional centers that were pre-RIA. So who had to file these forms? And did you have to file to redesignate? So I think there's regional centers out there who were approved before RIA came out who still haven't filed the I-956. So there's still much confusion.
Right. And the 956 was basically a form which said that you were going to continue being a regional center. So again, for anyone listening, I think they'll be totally like, what are you guys talking about? Just to narrow it all down, the government wants us to pay a fee, not us. The government wants regional centers to pay a fee, and they want one for each year. They mandated that both fees had to be paid by last year. If you didn't pay by a certain time, you weren't able to pay later, and therefore you were going to be terminated.
But Mono, the issue with that was the way USCIS came out with this new due date and how we were supposed to pay and what we're supposed to pay.
Of course. Again, they just opened the doors for anyone wanting to litigate. It's like, do they never learn? Really? It's like, done.
I think they're trying, but they're trying by committee is what's happening. Yeah, to the detriment of themselves.
Here's the problem. They basically decided they were going to regulate how they were going to do this. It was a strict liability issue, and they put it on their website, and they expected that that was going to be it. There was no in-person meetings, which they could have done. There was no real notice. Then, as I said, people were confused. Were we paying 1 year or 2 years? And very honestly, there was a very small period of time when many regional centers had to come up with 40,000 plus. Plus, you're paying your immigration attorneys and other fees. So 50, 60,000 is a lot of money to just pull up at a time. And the regional centers were just confused. Maybe they thought, maybe we'll just pay part of this and we'll be okay. They can see that we still intend to be a regional center. And what is more upsetting is that almost all of the regional centers, or a large quantity of the regional centers which received termination notices, still have many investors within them and who haven't received their final green cards and still need that regional center.
Yeah, these are people that are essentially waiting for the benefit they invested in, right?
Yes. So here we go again with litigation. I feel that America litigates more than any other country in the world.
Well, it could be a bad thing or it could be a good thing. We have all these other global markets out there with immigration and getting your passport, things like that. And I think a lot of times those other programs always say that the U.S. is always going through some kind of litigation. But, you know, in a way, it's a good thing, Mona. You know, we get our voices heard. The industry gets our voices heard. And sometimes the intent of what Congress puts into the regulations is construed a different way from what USCIS might think. But those who are actually in the industry, we're the ones who knows what's going on. And we're the ones who can tell you what the regulations should state, like work with us. And so this is the beauty of litigation at times.
I have to say, this is one of the few countries where you can litigate the government without any fear of reprisals.
Yes. And I think a lot of countries, they don't have that opportunity. I mean, we talked about this before with industry experts in other countries who even lobbying, you know, we have the beauty of lobbying and getting out there and putting money towards all of this litigation and going out there. And they don't have the same in those countries. So I think it helps. And making sure the regulations that come out are being followed to the way they're intended to be.
And for any of our listeners who have been following our podcast over the years, you would hear how the Bering Regional Center was one of the first regional centers to really challenge USCIS and manage to get those regulations overturned from 900 down to 500.
Yes.
And then again, they did a second litigation when USCIS decided that they were going to interpret the laws their way, and nobody else agreed with their interpretation.
A lot of people are like, okay, well, it's one regional center that filed the case that's litigating. And at this point, Mona...
Which regional center are you talking about? Bering?
No. So the current case that's being litigated.
Oh, you mean the litigation relating to the NOIT? Yes.
Yes. Because at least at the Bering case, it kind of helped all the other regional centers and it helped the EB-5 program.
Yeah.
It's this case now that we have. Will this affect all the other regional centers as well?
Well, not really, because it's just a lone case. It's not a case which is bringing other regional centers in. What we are hoping is that the judge's comments, which are really quite good. I mean, the judge himself stated that they felt it was a strict liability offense. He said, I think he described USCIS's position as bad policy. And he even asked for the rationale behind using a strict liability policy. He had obviously understood that this was dumb. USCIS, you want more money? Why are you terminating when you can just give notice and get more money? Add a penalty, add something else, add a sanction.
Exactly. And I think the important part here is that these regional centers, especially those, a lot of those that were received the NOIT, they have been running for X amount of years. You have hundreds of investors. At this point, to terminate just based on the fact that they didn't pay a fee, USCIS had the power to extend the deadline. They extended it. They just extended it from October of 2022 to April of 2023. Then it was to October of 2023. Then they extended it again to December 2023. So what's to say that you couldn't, one, extend the deadline again? Two, if you were going to give the deadline, if you knew that the deadline was October 31st and that 90-day period to pay was till December 31st, why didn't you give a notice, which is in RIA? Congress's intent was that you were supposed to give a notice to regional centers and not via website. You received the notice to say that you owe X amount in integrity fund fees for which fiscal years, like specify it. Or two, you came out, you sent NOIT wanting to terminate all these regional centers. And a week later, the policy manual came out with new guidance on sanctions. So why couldn't you give a penalty? You have the discretion to do this. You should have said, well, you know what? We're going to maybe give you a penalty or suspend your regional center, not terminate right away. I mean, you're terminating years of work and expense and investors who will be lost. Where do they go? What do they do?
Right. Well, these are people.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, they do have the option to go to other regional centers. And USCIS did say that, but it's not as easy as it sounds. You know, USCIS could say, yeah, you can go find another regional center. No, you have to first of all find a regional center who hasn't been terminated. And then you have to find a regional center who will accept your project. And then you have to pay that regional center money. And then you still don't have that connection with the developer that your previous regional center had. Mm-hmm. And it just adds to more confusion and it adds to more uncertainty, which is what we are trying to get away from. We are trying to make sure that the regional center program is run more smoothly. So we're hoping, aren't we, Rebecca, that USCIS sees the light. So what have people been doing, Rebecca, to just the people who have been issued NOIT? So obviously, not everybody has litigated.
No. So we have one case, one regional center that's in litigation. And
I know a few others who are in the middle of doing
that. Yes, and they're going to be in the middle of doing that as well. But we're hoping once USCIS sees that, they will understand that they don't want 100 cases coming to them, right? Because that's going to be their time and money and effort into that. So hopefully, if they see this coming, they'll make an overall policy change for all the other regional centers. But we have told anyone who's received a NOIT and you want to continue being a regional center that you should file a response. You need to have your legal arguments set and have a response in and make sure you're timely filed to be sure that anything that comes out, and you have done this all in good faith and showing that we have the intent of remaining in business. So that way, when USCIS comes out with any, hopefully they'd make the policy change that all these regional centers would be included.
Yeah, and even Judge Donald Malloy, who was the U.S. district judge in the one regional center which is litigating, I believe it's the Northern Rockies Regional Center, by the way, Montana. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he believed also that the way USCIS handled this just did not make sense. And that just because you fail to pay $20,000, you are in terminating, when really the termination sanction should be left for something way more serious, like fraud or, you know, something really worth be terminated for.
Exactly. I mean, that was the entire purpose of the Integrity Fund fee, is to have this to go out. They wanted to make sure investors coming in are protected, to make sure projects are following all the SEC regulations, all the audits that are happening. That's what you're supposed to go after. And then just not paying a fee, it could be an easy penalty or a simple notice at the same time. But, you know, again, that's where we're looking advocacy out there, you know, that's all going to happen. And the industry will come together and make sure that this is going to be taken care of.
Yeah, litigation could be a double-edged sword, but I believe here it's certainly definitely warranted, you know, because we've seen how some regional centers' delinquency is accidental, not intentional at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I can understand if you've gone years now or, you know, you've sent a notice and it's not even addressed and then you try to terminate a regional center. That makes sense. But I think here, it's still new. You haven't sent notice. You need to give everyone time to kind of come up with the funds or maybe understand the program. Where are we going with the program? You know, we discussed this, Mona, earlier. It's funny that USCIS says you have to give $10,000, $20,000. And then all of a sudden, they come and terminate 100 regional centers plus. That's a lot of money if they're letting go.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just give them a penalty and a late charge too, and it'll all make up for this.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think, Rebecca, from the RC standpoint, or the RCs who had paid and paid everything, and they were very on top of it, all the ones who are really going out there now using this as marketing, saying that, come to us. We know what we're doing. Don't go to a regional center who's got annoyed because of non-payment. You know, is that fair? Is that fair marketing?
No, I think it's a bit unfair. I mean, great that they've done what they were supposed to have done. But there's a lot of regional centers out there that did. They wanted to pay the fee. They went on the website. I mean, how many regional centers that we've seen said, well, I did pay the fee. Or the website wasn't working. I know our office, we've had to go on. I can't tell you how many times before they accepted a payment. And obviously, with us being a law firm, we made sure we kept going on. But there's plenty out there with regional centers that just thought maybe USCIS didn't want to accept their payment. Maybe they paid enough already. So I think there was just a lot of confusion on that. Maybe the fiscal year that they thought they were supposed to have paid was already paid. And then the next fiscal year was to be done. It does get confusing because the I-956G forms, which are compliance, is due for that fiscal year that was just ending. Whereas the integrity fee fund are actually due for the next fiscal year. So there was a lot of confusion with that as well.
Yeah, so unfair marketing is what you would say.
Exactly.
Well, I do think that USCIS did go too far. I mean, other than you correctly say, Rebecca, no notice or no proper notice and confusion that the scope of this regulating by website is just doesn't work, or at least it doesn't work without a notice, a written notice beforehand. But there's also a constitutional argument as well, isn't there, that it's too draconian?
Yes. And we've come up with a lot of arguments for arbitrary and capricious. Just come out and just terminate without giving proper notice. I think at the end of the day, it's USCIS, they will have to do something. It's too many regional centers out there. Like we said, it's a constitutional right as well. I mean, how far is too far? Not paying a fee versus regional centers that are out there that are maybe fraudulent projects or that aren't doing things with the SEC, those are projects and cases that we should be going after.
You know, we work with a lot of lawyers from the global world, Mark, who really, as you know, who don't understand anything to do with the EB-5 program, or they have a very simplified understanding. Then something like this happens and they get even more confused. You know, what lesson can we take out of all of this? It's just because of the confusion, don't regulate my website, USCIS.
Yes, and give proper notice. You know, how many times we've gotten an RFE in other cases, which is a request for evidence. But here, like we said, it was just too strict. they wanted to terminate unless you had proof that you paid the fee without any other explanation. Why couldn't you pay the fee or what happened? And they're going to see a lot of responses to that. Regional centers will say, I wanted to pay the fee. I want to continue with the regional center, but for the website being down, but for confusion and everything that's been happening.
Right. And by now, you know, USCIS coming up with these random decisions and then going through this whole confusion and litigation process, they do have an opportunity to speak and engage with the industry. And we all have been pushing and pushing for this. And they did used to do this. I don't know why they just suddenly decided that they weren't going to do this anymore. But I do hope that this is, again, another lesson which comes out of all of this.
We're going to do something a little differently this time and bring in some audio comments from people in our shared industry.
And I'm really happy today to have a comment from Kelly Fries of International Growth Capital. Right, Kelly?
Yeah.
Kelly has 15 years of experience in EB-5. She's kind of a veteran, I would say, with what, over $2.5 billion in projects and capital?
Yes, we're happy to report that.
Successful projects, I will say. So, Kelly, there's been so much consternation about these noise and stuff. And we've discussed how the judge in the Montana case really described USCIS' position as bad policy. And he really wanted to understand what the rationale was behind using as a quote-unquote strict liability policy. I mean, why would they do that? The main reason I think the judge really did think this way is because these notices are to terminate, they're having the wrong impression in the industry. First of all, they're panicking people. Secondly, they're undermining years and years of marketing and good relations and producing jobs and bringing money into the country, right?
Yes. As an EB-5 project manager who manages projects in multiple states, we find this extremely disheartening that this action would be taken, because you have a lot of good, innocent people, not only that built the projects, have returned capital and gotten people their green cards. At the same time, you have unforetold trauma from people that are concerned about the certainty of their green card based on these issues. And it's unfair. It's unfair because these regional centers think that they're in compliance and they're filing their documents and they have people filing papers and paying fees. And then they're getting a notice in the mail. They don't get a notice that they did anything wrong. They just get a notice that they're going to be terminated.
We work with multiple regional centers, right?
Yes, in multiple states. And we have multiple clients that are panicking and very upset because they feel they did not do anything wrong.
Yeah. And a lot of these clients already did try and pay and they weren't able to pay because the portal was closed. Or as one of our clients, they got a payment rejected and they thought it was rejected because they didn't need to pay. There was no notice or anything which came out.
Yes. And we have multiple projects that also, it'll go a notch above that. We have multiple projects that believe that they had paid or have proof of payment and they're still receiving these notices. So there's a whole other layer of problems that are happening with the processing and the documentation. And the way that they're processing these records are not up to the standards that they're requiring the regional centers to uphold. So this is a blatant double standard, and it should be against the law.
I couldn't agree with you more, Kelly. Let me ask you a couple of things, though, about some of the panic that you're seeing. What type of panic?
So we are having applicants that think that their green card status might be in jeopardy, and they are actually panicking the regional center.
Right.
And some regional centers have or have not received notices. There's a lot of gossip and drama going on around all the industry. And the people that have received these termination notices are now trying to figure out if they're accurate or what's correct or how this even happened or what they did wrong. Because anybody that's been in the industry for a while would be accustomed to having seen from time to time an RSE or a request for information, anything related to updates with the project, or, you know, maybe someone's paperwork was off from time to time. But to outright receive a termination notice for no foundation basis is just absurd.
You know, Kelly, you are such an advocate for your investors. I can really feel hear the passion in your voice.
I'm an advocate for our investors' rights. And when people go against that and they want to jeopardize their safety, then we have to stand up against that. And we as an industry have to band together and fight, because this is not right. These people have spent their hard after-tax earned dollars to do legal citizenship. These people aren't selling drugs or jumping borders or doing anything crazy. They're trying to have legal citizenship and
investing in this country.
Yes, and creating jobs. That's what the program was founded for.
Right. And we're not talking about investing a small amount either. It's a lot of money.
This is a lot of money for a lot of families. It could be the majority of their wealth.
And Mark, I'm delighted to have Pete Conklin from ILAND EB-5 Regional Center who's going to make a comment here. Pete, welcome to Global Investment Voice.
Thank you, Mona. Nice to talk to you.
So you know that we've all been discussing this issue at great length because this really is the gossip in the industry right now. And a lot of the industry is panicking, which is really kind of unnecessary. Your regional center didn't receive any noids, right?
That's right. We didn't receive any. We've been at this for a while, so we've stayed in compliance. No notices for us.
You're relatively a new regional center. You haven't been around too long, so we will say that it's a lot of your initial homework, right?
That's true. That's true. What's interesting is that I do have some friends that got that notice. They don't know what to do. Of course, they're angry, but, you know, they didn't get any other notice. Just suddenly, you know, a notice to terminate. Not, hey, you need to pay us money or anything like that. Just suddenly they quit.
I don't think this is what Congress really wanted. It doesn't seem to make logical sense, right? I mean, why don't you just open your portal and get more money, have a fine or something?
Right, exactly. Or just a couple of notices. Hey, you need to pay us this money. They would pay, probably.
Regional centers have been asked to pay a lot of money nowadays, though. I mean, from filing fees to all of this, it's not cheap to run a regional center.
No, the prices have gone up crazy since April, as you know.
Yes.
And this is just another fee and maybe just another cost of doing business, but we pay it.
Right. But the cost of closing down a regional center where there are investors is considerable. Do you feel that it is a little too draconian?
Well, absolutely. It's a very heavy-handed step to me, Mona. I don't know. There had to be some other way to do this. It's just an odd way to do it, if you ask me.
What are your colleagues doing who received a noise? Are they fighting it or are they just closing their doors?
Some are closing, but most are planning to fight, though.
So now USCIS is going to spend unnecessary dollars in fighting.
That's right.
Again.
So they'll raise their fees so that we can pay that, so that they can fight.
Yeah, it doesn't make logical sense, does it?
No. I don't understand. They're being a little bit of a playground bully.
I like that, playground bully.
And there's nothing anybody can do about it. I mean, what recourse do we have except to sue?
Yeah, I know that we do a lot of litigation in this country. I mean, sometimes the litigation is very frustrating and a lot of times the litigation is unfair. But the one thing that Rebecca and I just commented on is the fact that this is a country where we can litigate with the government. We can sue the government without fear of reprisals. This litigation that Montana's doing might just be one regional center. There'll be others. A lone regional center won't fix it, but at least USCIS is getting the message.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess that's one thing about living in the US that is great. Yes, we can sue the government and we don't have to worry about them coming after us or anything like that. But it's still a shame that we have to take that step.
No.
Because it doesn't always where, you know, we can sue and we can still lose. Now we're really out.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of money to sue as well. But
yep.
Pete, I love to hear your voice. We love to hear the opinions of the industry on this program, wherever you are and whatever your opinion is. So we thank you for coming on Global Investment Voice.
Thank you, Mona.
So there you are. As you can see, this opinion is not just ours. I believe it really runs throughout the whole industry.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it based off the audio comments we received.
Yeah, so I would hope, Maher and Mona, when we come back next time, that we have better news and maybe all this issue will be behind us and USCIS will actually change the policy.
You know, it's often hard to do these podcasts when we want to keep them timely, when we have some issues, because obviously if somebody is listening to this podcast weeks later, then they're going to say, what was that? But at the same time, Mark, it is important considering how many people are panicking and worrying about what's going on to show that, no, look, calm down. It's okay. It's just another day in the life of EB-5 and it will get resolved.
It's the season of the industry. Yeah, we've been here long enough to where we've seen cycles and now this is just seasonality. Yeah.
Exactly. But at least we are trying to keep you all up to date.
Yep. And this is where you get all your information from Global Investment Voice.
Thank you for being with us today on Global Investment Voice. Do you want to get the most out of global migration and citizenship opportunities? Then head on over to our website at globalinvestmentvoice.com. From there, you can easily search and stream from hundreds of podcast episodes, as well as stay current with the latest migration news and investment opportunities by joining our insider newsletter. The topics presented in this podcast are informational in nature only and are not to be taken as specific legal, financial, or investment advice. Mona, Rebecca, and their legal staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com or by calling their New York office at 212-233-7473.